Blog Talk Radio.
NFL Draft Bible Player Spotlight.
Welcome, welcome everyone to another edition of the NFL Draft Bible. We got a change up. It is the Combine Special. Today we're sitting back today and going on everything that's been happening at the NFL Combine. As of yesterday we went through offensive line was out there yesterday, along with tight ends, and there was some pretty impressive numbers going on, and we saw a lot of measurables that came out of the whole Combine. One of the big stories was, which was really interesting, was that Chance Womack, the big guard, almost on most people's boards as one of the top players overall in this year's draft, measured in a lot shorter than he looked on field. He's really known more for that huge gut he has hanging out and extra short hemmed up jersey. But he came out and only measured up at 6'2". 317 pounds, which I don't think it hurt his draft stock at all, but I guess it put a lot of people on notice. The one thing is he still has long arms, which is definitely going to help him. And also joining us on this NFL Draft Bible Combine Special is our man Rich Serratella. So we're going to patch Rick in and see what's up with him. Rick, what's going on, man? What's going on?
Oh, can't stop, won't stop, man. I'm telling you, every year I watch the Combine, bigger, stronger, faster athletes. It's incredible.
Yo, we were just talking about, Chance Womack, and as one of the stories coming in, how he ended up measuring at 6'2", 317, which is a lot lighter than he, and a lot shorter than people expected, but he was still productive in the SEC.
Yeah, I think he was. I think, you know, at the school site he was about 360. I think, you know, at the combine I believe he measured 339. I'll double check that in a second. But you know, the fact of the matter is this: Chance Womack is arguably hands down the best prospect in this draft. So I don't really think. I think, you know, the fact that he dropped some weight just means he's working hard, you know, in the whole draft preparation process. If you want to play devil's advocate, you say, well, was he not in the best shape then his junior season?
That's pretty true. Well, one thing, when you look at 6'2", you kind of think, well, how's he going to go against those bigger guys? And, you know, he's shown that the knock on him was that he's dominated against guys in the SEC, but when he's played out of conference against lesser competition, his kind of he played down to their level, which – sometimes is a red flag, but I don't think it's really going to pertain to him too much because, I mean, if he's plays to the top level, he's going to do fine in the NFL playing against the better guys.
Yeah, you know, I think this stage of the process, you know, it gets to a certain point where you build a guy up so much and then we start to tear him down. I mean, you know, at this stage of the game, we all know Chance Womack, top 10, probably top 5, arguably top prospect in the draft. I think, you know, we're looking for nooks and crannies. I heard, you know, a lot of times, too, you get these people that hop on board with the draft process. You know, maybe they weren't paying attention during the season. They were covering the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And they hear something, and it just gets repeated. And I heard somebody say, well, he has trouble learning. And the kid's been coached by Nick Saban, and he's an honor roll student. So, I mean, you know, he's an all-academic kid off the field. He's probably been coached harder than any offensive lineman in the draft, but he has a learning disability. You know, there's so much stuff out there. I think, you know, NFL scouts know that Chance Womack is the real deal daddy.
Right. I guess some of that is a little bit of deception where you want to put out that the guy might have something wrong with him to help him drop to your team if you actually need him.
Yeah, smoke screen. Probably a top 10 team putting that rumor out there.
Exactly. Let's talk about the quarterbacks. I mean, today's the quarterback day, and as we all know, Matt Barkley is not involved in this, which a lot of people, I guess, are not happy with because his whole thing was his arm, and he played with elite players on his team, which made it easier for him. And it really hasn't helped that he's not throwing because I think a lot of people want to see him up close and personal. But what has been good is that Geno Smith and E.J. Manuel have both been as advertised, guys have been looking better than expected, especially Geno Smith. He's kind of solidified that why he might be the number one pick.
Yeah, I think so. But at the same time, the more and more I see of EJ Manuel, you know, we got a good look at him at the All-Star circuit and now out here at the Combine. You know, I'm starting to begin to wonder whether or not he's not right there, up there with Geno Smith, equal par. You know, I think EJ Manuel's been the one quarterback probably not talked about. And you look at his college career, and this kid's a player, man. And I think if you look at the NFL level, where you're seeing more Colin Kaepernick, Cam Newton, you know, what Chip Kelly's looking to install now in Philly with, you know, Dennis Dixon or Marcus Vick, whoever starts down there, I think you're seeing more of this pistol style. Not, I don't want to brand it as an offense, but I think more teams would like to have a quarterback where they can have that pistol package incorporated into the offense just to keep defenses off their, you know, unbalanced. And I'm not so sure. I mean, the more I watch EJ Manuel, man, I'm not really in love with Geno Smith as much as everybody else. I think,
really,
I think the fact that, you know, when you talk about, is he NFL ready? And I don't think he's NFL ready right now. I think he needs some time, but I think the nature of the beast in this NFL in this day and age is that he's got to be thrown into the mix. He's got to start right away. And because we've seen previous draft class quarterbacks come in and insert those rookie cornerbacks from the jump, I'm not so sure Geno Smith's that guy. And I wonder, you know, if he gets drafted into a situation like Kansas City where the offensive line is not too good to begin with. Brandon Albert's a free agent. You know, you remember David Carr when he was the first pick, he got clobbered back there. And, you know, that can shatter a quarterback's confidence. So if Geno Smith was coming in a situation where it was like a Jake Locker, you know, Matt Hasselbeck handing the torch down, even Eli Manning sat behind Kurt Warner for a half a season. But if Geno Smith has to come in and play right away, I have my questions about that.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, excuse me, that he has Andy Reid, who's been decent with quarterbacks. But you know what? He's always been good with the backup quarterbacks. He's always produced damn good backup quarterbacks. All right, now, everybody, you tune into the NFL Draft Bible Combine special. Right now, if you're looking into the draft, looking into the NFL Combine, the running backs are up running right now. We just had C.J. Anderson out of Cal run his first 40. Next up, we got Monte Ball, pretty much a very, very productive running back out of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Monte Ball, I think, didn't he have lead the NCAA in touchdowns this year?
Yeah, you know, look at Monte Ball. He has a decorated career, and you talk about, you know, a kid from that probably could be the top running back off the board. I mean, that possibility is still there. Wisconsin coaching staff has told him, you know, they've spoken to NFL teams that believe he's the number one overall back. And you look at the size, 5'10 and a half, 214. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see what that 40 time just came in at, but
it came out as a 4.62.
4.62, unofficial.
4.62.
Okay.
I mean, we got an old lineman running that fast.
we had Monte Ball projected in that 4.50 range, so he'll get another go at it. You know, we look at Kenjon Barner here from Oregon, 4.44, and you know, he looks like a pretty good back on paper. You know, you see 5'9", 196, and you look at, you know, how he fills out that frame at 5'9", 196.
Right.
Maybe just an inch under the prototypical size, but 4.4 speed. I know at least one head coach in Chip Kelly is paying attention.
Right. Well, one thing with the short running backs, and Kenyon just posted a 4.44, and one thing I think that's helping him are guys like Doug Martin, Jacquizz Rodgers. The smaller backs have kind of had a lot of success in the last few years. You had Maurice Jones-Drew only a year removed from being the leading rusher in the NFL. You have Ray Rice doing great out in Baltimore. So I think more teams are not afraid of those small, compact running backs because they have been having a lot of success over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, I mean, you tell me from a defensive lineman perspective, I'm always interested when I talk to the defensive line prospects on the Player Spotlight Show, I ask them, I say, you know, how much more difficult is it finding those guys because they kind of duck and hide behind the offensive line, and then, boom, all of a sudden a hole opens up. And if you got a guy like Kenjon Barner who has burst and acceleration and hits the hole with quickness, I mean, being a big defensive lineman, these guys kind of hide and tuck away behind. I mean, how much harder is it to find these guys, you know, when they're back there behind the big offensive lineman? I mean, you tell me, baby.
You know, it's with them, it's a lot easier to get them down on the ground because they're already low to the ground. With a taller player, you can go low, wrap them up, and get them down. Those shorter guys, it's like even though you might think you have him down, he's pretty much might still be breaking out of the tackle. So that's the one difference. Like if you're a tall guy, you got to get low to make sure you get those guys on the ground. I mean, I had a traumatic experience my sophomore year in college tackling a running back who was nothing but 5'4", 150 pounds, and I completely missed the tackle because I thought he was down, but he pretty much was still standing up. up next, we have Giovanni Bernard out of North Carolina. He's actually rated as the top running back prospect on NFL.com. On our NFL Draft Bible, he's ranked, where is it, number two or three?
Number two behind Eddie Lacy. And, 5'8", 202, a little bit shorter than what I expect out of my feature back in terms of carrying the workload and toting the rack. I look at a guy like Eddie Lacy, 231 pounds, and has a resume and a track record that's done it in the SEC with some big boy competition. So, you know, when I look at Eddie Lacy and I look at Giovanni Bernard, both very talented running backs, but different style of running backs. I think Giovanni Bernard provides that big play explosiveness. I think if you want somebody who wants to carry the rock 20, 25 times, Eddie Lacy's the guy to do that.
And Giovanni Bernard just posted a 4.50. Talking about Lacy, the thing with him is I believe is going to really help him was the year Trent Richardson had last year. Trent Richardson looked great last year. And when we see from year to year is that, especially with running backs, one running back sets the precedent for the next. And this is how I looked at how Darren McFadden went so high, because before him, Adrian Peterson had a phenomenal year. And coming out of Arkansas, Darren McFadden was looked at as like, oh, he was an AP comparison. So he ended up going high, and Darren McFadden has been productive, but he's been hurt a whole hell of a lot. So when I look at drafts, especially for running backs, if one running back does great the year before, they're going to bring somebody in the draft that's going to get pushed up because of that. And I think Lacy is going to be one of those guys.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment 1,000%. And based on, you know, some of the executives and players and pro personnel guys from around the league, you know, you're going to find out that Eddie Lacy is a higher-rated running back prospect than Mark Ingram coming out. I mean, Trent Richardson coming out from a year ago. So, you know, I think that bodes well for his draft stock. On the flip side, you know, this muscle tear, torn labrum, some kind of injury he just recently had, I think it could hurt a little bit. But, you know, you get to the back end of that first round, there's some veteran teams that could use a good running back. You talk about, you know, the Green Bay Packers are searching for a workhorse back. You know, the Steelers have so many other needs. I don't know if they would consider a first-round running back, but, you know, Mendenhall, who they're parting ways with, I think Mendenhall was a first- or second-round guy. So I wouldn't count them out either. But, you know, when you look at running backs as a whole, and Nile Davis coming down the pike right now, you know, at one point considered, you know, one of the top running backs in this draft class, kind of, you know, had a disappointing year. 4.30 for Nile Davis. So, you know, at 5'10", 227, that's some good numbers, man. And Andre Ellington from Clemson up next, he should be a speed burner as well. You know, those Clemson running backs, you talk about C.J. Spiller and some of the guys that came before him always burning, and, you know, he had a false start, so he'll redo it.
That at 227 run to 4.3, this is where it's going to get crazy now. Now you see that, now he's just moved up to like the number top five running back in the whole draft. That's how it's been working.
Yeah.
That 4.3 just changed everything.
Well, Well, you know, and a lot of people say, well, you know, the combine, people don't really put much stock into it. Really? Well, I don't know. I mean, when you talk about skill positions, people want to see a certain speed. And, you know, look at Ace Sanders from South Carolina today. He came out. He's strictly considered a kick-returning prospect. He's about 5'6", 5'7", and he's not going to play wide receiver at the next level. He comes out, he runs a 4.52 and a 4.59, and you know, he's a one-dimensional player. That hurts your draft stock. So, I mean, I think more stock goes into these 40 times than you think. And, you know, Nile Davis just earned himself a couple rounds on his draft stock, man.
Exactly. Hopefully,
Andre Andre Ellington comes in at 4.59, so a little disappointing for him because we figured him to be in the 4.4 range.
Yeah, it's kind of strange that the impact of drafting running backs high used to be important. Used to be kind of a thing to do because getting a great running back was the cornerstone of your team. And now moving to the passing area is not the same. But also in that same breath is that the running backs are not posting up the times they were before. Like they used to, running backs were looked to run in the 4.4s, and now a lot of people are saying, well, you know, we don't need a speed back all the time. We need a guy with just enough speed that, you know, he could break tackles, get first downs, but they're not always looking for that game breaker. They're far and few in between now.
Yeah, you know, I think as we watch Michael Ford from LSU, who needs a big combine day to improve his draft stock, 4.50 for the LSU running back. Yeah, you know, I think getting back to your point, Aki, I think the way the running back position is viewed now, and Jonathan Franklin, one of my favorite running backs in the whole draft class, taking off right now, and he just ran a good 40. Let's see what that comes in. 5'10", 205. This guy runs like a man possessed. Jonathan Franklin, you know, 4.47. So, you know, there's another explosive back. And, you know, you talk about that big play burst. I think the running back position now is viewed more like, you know, we can wait on the running back position. If we wait and look for a guy that fits our scheme, I think teams do a better job now of scouting running backs that match up to their scheme rather than, you know, drafting the fastest guy or taking the best running back on the board. I think the running back position is the easiest position to make the transition to the next level and be able to find a guy and plug and play him. And you look at Mike Gillisley from Florida, another one of these faster, quicker running backs, 4.50 unofficial. Nile Davis, the fastest running back so far, 4.30 at 227 pounds, definitely helping himself out with the draft stock today.
Well, let's talk about that. You talk about running backs falling. And this is like I call it the Alfred Morris model, because a lot of people will say that he's not really a 1,600-yard back. and it really is hard to make it a good evaluation because he does play in that the system that Shanahan has, which is known for just pumping out running backs. I mean, look at Tatum Bell, Ruben Jones. I think Quentin Griffin. There were so many just random running backs that produced in that system. So
Mike Anderson, Orlandis Gary,
Mike Anderson.
You know, Terrell Davis was a 6th-round pick.
Exactly. So, you know, when you look at these running backs, like, do they really need the measurables to be successful, or do they just need the right system? And it's almost sounding like a quarterback. Like, your quarterback is as good as his system. So, is the running backs, like, are they any, like, there's very few running backs that you could say you could pluck them into any team and they're going to be the best one.
Yeah.
And it seems like running backs are becoming more system kind of backs than actual legit, just, you know, all around productive running backs.
Well, I think, you know, a couple things here is, one, I think sometimes we lose track of the people who came before us. And, you know, nobody wanted to listen to Howard Schnellenberger before the draft last year. This guy, I mean, he went around every media circuit there was telling you that Alfred Morris was the best running back in the draft. Howard Schnellenberger was telling you. But nobody wanted to listen, you know.
Right.
What does he know? He's down in Florida Atlantic, washed up now, an old man, right? this guy knows talent. Nobody wanted to listen. And, you know, I remember the teams attending the Florida Atlantic Pro Day were there scouting him as a fullback. And he turned in times of 4.62, 4.67. I think he ran 4.69. And, you know, while we didn't have a draftable grade on him, he was definitely one of our top priority free agents. But I think also part of this equation, too, is Mike Shanahan is a rule to the exception. I think it's just unfair to compare what this man has been able to do. Selvin Young is another guy that comes to mind. You know, he takes a guy off the street that ain't even in the league, plugs him in, and he ran, you know, wild for a couple, you know. So I think Shanahan is the master of the zone blocking scheme, and he goes back to the Alex Gibbs days, you know, Alex Gibbs installing that zone scheme blocking running style. So I think he owes a lot to Alex Gibbs, but he's carried on that tradition, and I think he does the job better than anybody. And Gary Kubiak, you see, learned from Mike Shanahan pretty well when he went over to the Houston Texans and installing a zone scheme running blocking attack. And what did he do? He found Arian Foster undrafted, fits the zone blocking scheme, plugs him in, and what, you know, 1,400 and double-digit touchdowns the last 3 years, right?
Right. Yeah, and with Arian Foster, too, with him, it was like, he was just there on the practice squad for about a year or two. It's just like he just came out of nowhere. And it's like, how do you – with the practice squad, first of all, it's kind of weird how you can hide a guy there because teams know who's on your practice squad roster because they're picking at, they're picking off of it all year. So for him just to even – just not even get swiped up by anybody is kind of – it's kind of impressive. And that's what we talk about, probably coaches just like hiding him and not letting him get seen by anyone. Like it's minimizing the preseason.
It's interesting because Arian Foster, coming into his senior season, you talk about the Blesto and the national grades, he was actually the top-rated running back heading into his senior year. And then, you know,
yeah,
he was
really
just
down
like,
year, though.
Yeah, and then he was always injured.
His senior didn't go too well.
The injuries killed him, and he fell so far off that he went undrafted. And, you know, I look at a guy who just ran a 4.72. A guy that, you know, we don't really have rated too high on the NFL draft Bible board compared to a lot of other, you know, draft circles out there. You know, their big boards have Ray Graham from Pittsburgh as an early round guy. We see him more as a mid to late round guy running a 4.72, definitely not going to help your draft stock.
Finished running as well was Mike James out of University of Miami. That's who I was kind of looking to see too, because Mike James, I like Mike James. You know, I can't. First of all, I'm not gonna lie. I'm always partial to Miami all the time.
Yeah.
So I always look for one of their players this week to bring that Miami, that Miami swagger back to the NFL. I think that's what we're missing. You know, that era is pretty much coming to an end because you know Ray's on his way out. Clinton Portis was out. Santana Moss at the end of his career. You know, unfortunately, we lost Sean Taylor. Ed Reed is on the back end of his career. So, like, those guys who made the U what it is, you know, there's not that many guys left. The only guys I can really think of right now is somebody like John Beeson, who's still around. So, you know, I'm hoping somebody like Mike James can come back in and just bring that University of Miami flavor back to the league.
Yeah, I remember the days where, you know, the U Pro Day was like the biggest, you know, draft event, you know, of the whole draft process. You know, everybody used to circle that U Pro Day and every team would be down there. And, you know, the NFL talent maybe not pumping out from Miami like it used to, but still going to be a very highly attended Pro Day. And Mike James, a guy we spoke with early on in the draft process, I think is a draft diamond. You know, you talk about a diamond in the rough. You know, you talk about a guy like Bill Polian, who I believe drafted Edgerrin James. So sees a lot of qualities in Mike James. So, you know, I think that Mike James is a guy flying under the radar that we talked about, could be had probably in the middle of the draft. You know, maybe even later on in the draft because I think it's a trickle-down effect. you know, you have maybe one running back in the first round. So now teams are waiting on that running back. So it's a trickle-down effect where in years past, 5-6 years ago, you might see five running backs go in round one. I think now
right.
it's a trickle-down effect. You might see, you know, one guy go in the first round, two or three in the second round, and then six guys in the third round. So I think Mike James is a perfect example when you talk about trying to find a guy later on down the road in the draft and match him up to your offensive scheme. Mike James is a guy who could come into the league and be a 1,000-yard rusher.
Now, one thing that you're talking about how running backs getting pushed down, the one thing that is not changing, I think everybody just needs to be aware of, there's always defensive end and D linemen that are going in the first round. To me, it seems like that has been the new trend. As many D ends as possible as you can draft in the first round, go ahead and do it. Like, that seems to be the thing now. It's becoming like that premier position. And I mean, even though D ends will be on, I think, on Monday, that's the group I'm really excited to see because you have guys like Jarvis Jones, Barcavius Mingo, the guy out of Estonia, I can't think of his name, Marcus Hunt, Bjorn Vorner. There's just so many just players coming out of that defensive
class.
Ooh,
I'm sorry. 4-2-7. 4-2-7.
Ontario McClay.
Aaron McCaleb. Woo.
Wow.
Man. And, you know, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, my man, but I watched him fly down the line. And, you know, I was actually at the New Jersey Regional Combine last night watching guys go through all this up close and in person. Of course, we got Joe Everett down in Indy covering the Combine for us. But, you know, watching the guys up close in person, then watching Ontario McCaleb come down the line. Wow, man, I tell you, you talk about a kid who really built up his draft stock with the All-Star Game performance. He got an invitation to the Raycom All-Star Game. From there, he got an invitation to the East-West Shrine Game. Scouts wanted to see more and more of him. They invited him to the Senior Bowl, and now he just blazed a 4.27. Talk about earning him some money. 5'10", 168, Aki.
Thing I look at, that 168, that he is way too svelte to even be considered to be, I think, a running back. I'm thinking more as, you know, they see that he's going to go into that kick returner, punt returner, specialist kind of guy, because at 168, I don't even think DeSean Jackson weighs 168. I think he's about 175 at least. So that guy's going to have to bulk up, of course, but somebody who's at 168 right now, I think they probably max out at maybe 175, and it's going to be tough for him to really find just a permanent home, I believe, at running back. He's going to be a utility player who's going to probably fill in out of a lot of different positions, and somebody that size, I think it would be, you know, beneficial for him to probably be out there and running with the receivers because he's going to have to be that kind of Darren Sproles-type guy to really make an impact on any team.
I think he's a gidget and gadget type player like a Dexter McCluster, but Dexter McCluster
exactly.
Needs a little bit more size. And, you know, I saw McCaleb cut way in that 165 range at the All-Star Games. And every All-Star Game he participated in, I was just like, man, at 5'10", I wish he'd pack on some pounds. I wish he packed in.
Right.
And then he comes to the Combine and only weighs in 168. So it's like, you know, you got to realize that this is not an ideal playing weight. And, you know, I saw a kid at the Jersey Combine in Waldwick last night, Jason Washington from Pace University. And he was 168, and he was only 5'6", 5'7". And
wow.
I'm looking at him like he's a Arena League kid probably, you know. So, you know, Ontario McCaleb, while he's been – you know, arguably the most impressive player in the All-Star circuit and runs arguably the fastest 40 time, you know, I got to question whether or not he can withstand the pounding of a 16-game schedule at the next level.
You know, he's going to be the kind of guy who's going to benefit pretty much from going to getting drafted by a team that's already stacked because that's the kind of guy you have time to figure out where to use him because one thing they always say, the golden rule, you can't teach speed. So those are the kind of guys you go and find and say, all right, you know, we have, you know, a surplus at all these positions. What do we need to add? It's like, hey, we can always find another fast guy to throw, to get on the team and groom. And I think that's going to be kind of the same thing that happens to a guy like Denard Robinson. He's going to be that kind of utility player at the beginning because he's not quite
right.
A full-time receiver. He's not going to be groomed into be a quarterback. He's going to come and run some gadget plays. So I kind of see that, but I believe that with Denard Robinson's size and he is really a really great athlete, he's going to be able to he's going to be able to do more in his first year. Just to throw this out, tell everybody, we're going to be joined right now by Geargat Musin. He is one of the trainers at Tess Sports Clubs in Martinsville, New Jersey. Gear has been out here training a couple of players who are going to be in a combine. So, everybody, let me introduce you to Geargat Musin from Tess Sports Clubs. Gear, what's going on, man?
Hey, Ricky, how are you?
I'm doing good. Everybody, Geargat Musin, he's coming to us live on the NFL Draft Bible Combine Special. Gear, I'm sure you're sitting at home watching the combine. What are your thoughts so far?
Well, you know, this time for me and for all the staff at Tess is a very exciting time just because all this work, all this preparation, all this time spent with these kids goes into this one moment. And, you know, nothing gives me more pleasure than watching them succeed and run and do well, at, you know, at one of the biggest events in their life.
Now, when you're sitting here watching the 40s, the one thing I've been watching is that, and I know Addo, this is more Addo's thing, the guys haven't been running that straight. Like, when they go from, like, the straight-ahead view, you see them swerving. What kind of makes the guy in his running technique swerve like that? Is it just like, you know, if somebody's not running in a straight line, what is that really attributed to?
Sometimes it's balance. Sometimes it's just coming off on the wrong angle. But, you know, like Otto said, I mean, we work a ton with balance and you know, coming out. It's all about repetitions. I mean, they do thousands and thousands of reps for this one rep in front of everybody. So, you know, it's got to be like clockwork. It's got to be, you know, ingrained in their head, you know, what the step, where the step's going to go, how far it's going to go. So I can't really attribute it to anything. I know our guys are definitely prepared for this. Asking the side-to-side running, maybe it could be arm swing, it could be, you know, driving out the wrong way, but you know, it is what it is. But, you know, our guys, it seemed like they've done well.
What guys do you actually have at the combine this year?
Rod, well, we have a couple facilities. We have a facility in San Diego, we have a facility in Florida, and we have a facility, two facilities in New Jersey. The guys that I've been working with, are Rontez Miles, out of Cal, PA, safety. Explosive athlete. He's going to surprise a lot of people. He's definitely on the radar. We got Miguel Masonette. He's a running back from Stony Brook. Great hips, great power, and, you know, great 1AA kid, kind of getting some shine at the combine. And our third guy is Bruce Taylor, a linebacker out of Virginia Tech. Hard-hitting guy, just, you know, he's got a knack for the ball. So those are our guys from the New Jersey facilities.
Now, looking evaluating the O-line yesterday, there was a couple of fast times and there was a couple of guys out there that looked pretty good. Personally speaking, I thought Lane Johnson looked amazing. But, I mean, that goes really back to him being a quarterback, turn tight end, turn tackle. Were there any guys watching just the O-line that you thought looked impressive just out there running and just in the positional drills?
Hey, the truth, overall, I've never seen a more athletic group. I mean, as you can tell, I mean, what was it, you know, six guys under 5'0"?
So,
like breaking.
Yeah.
And that's unheard of as an O-lineman.
Right.
I mean, maybe times are changing, I guess. You know, they need more athletic offensive linemen, so the people
right.
who are college going that direction. But as a group, as a whole, I thought it was actually amazing to watch. You know, being an ex offensive lineman, you know,
right.
having to get the sundial out when I was running, and seeing these guys, run, you know, unbelievable times. It's just very impressive to see a guy that big move
mm-hmm.
that fast and have great hips like that. It was fun to watch.
Well, one thing is also you're seeing that a lot of these guys are not coming in with bad bodies or weighing 330 anymore. A lot of these guys are in that 6'5", you know, 6'8" range and weighing maybe about, you know, 315, 320 and look pretty damn good. It's like I haven't seen, like, I guess all you only see the bad bodies at the D tackles, like the, what was it, the Don Terry Poe's and the, well, Don Terry Poe's built pretty well, but the, can't see, Terrence Cody, that's what I'm thinking about, Terrence Cody back in, he was looking all flabby and everything, but I think all the fat guys have moved to the D-line now and all the athletic guys have moved to the O-line.
I agree. It might be the times have been changed, and, you know, like I said, you know, guys want more athletic linemen, need to be able to pull, need to be able to, you know, reach that three technique. That fast-paced kind of, you know, I guess that Oregon now, you know, Eagles coach, you know, what's his name, Skip? He's bringing that to the NFL. You know, the RG3. You got to prepare for that option, that fast quarterback, and you got to have linemen that can move and get downfield, get to the second level. So, might be the times are changing.
Well, let's talk about that because I know you guys do positional drills over at a test with the old linemen. So, what do you work more on now? Because, like you said, it's becoming the offense is changing and. And I know when you go against more of these spread offenses and everything, the blocking schemes change. Blocking schemes do change, but just the whole overall, just like blocking, it's not the same. A lot of guys come out of 2-point stances, and it changes. Even as for me as a D lineman, it's like I already know, like when I line up, the ball's probably just going to come out quick, and I'm not going to be able. Like if a guy's under center, and I'm in a 3-tech. I feel I have a better chance of getting to him because he's taking his drop steps. When he's back. You know, kick a ball and shotgun, he sees me coming. He has more time to see it. So what have you guys really been working on these guys and preparing them for the positional drills?
Well, positional drills, obviously you want to work on, you know, combine specific, what they're going to be seeing, mm-hmm. you know, what the offensive line coach, what the scouts are going to be putting them through, obviously that. The second part of it is more just, you know, O-line specific work. Yes, we're going to have to work on the run block, and yeah, we're going to have to work on, you know, getting out and pulling wide and making sure your hips open up and, you know, that's something that I've always tried to work on and work with, you know, no matter how, you know, big or slow they were, just to kind of get them comfortable moving outside because you never know what kind of system they're going to be brought into, you know. So I just try to prepare them for everything.
Hey, listen. Now, while you're sitting here watching this and you're evaluating these guys, do you find yourself saying, damn, man, if you just corrected this, you're running a fast 40. Is there anybody that you've seen who's like technique you just want to run down on the field and correct right now?
That is my curse because I watch and I pinpoint and I'm like I sit here, I'm analyzing these guys, and I'm sure Otto Bolden, you know, our you know, speed coach that comes in, he does the same thing because we've talked, you know, Skip Fuller, our, you know, one of our performance directors does the same thing. It's like our curse. We're always looking and correcting, and but I can see who's been coached, and I can see who's, you know, kind of been lacking in that aspect in that way.
You know, the one thing I look for automatically is like when to see where he puts that off arm, that up arm in their running stance, because I know as you guys always stretch, cock it as high as possible. To make sure it's like it's at maximum tension and everything. And I just see guys do all types of weird things. Guys put their hands straight up in the air, which cuts back on time. Or when they take that first step out, they throw their hands all the way up in the air, which cuts back on their time. So it was kind of like, you know, where are these guys training? Where are they learning this from? Or is it just like all these different philosophies, something like, you know, because I always thought there was like one kind of like philosophy that everybody's sticking to that should work. So when you see stuff like that, you know, what do you think about, you know, what they've been doing as far as their training? I mean, I know you don't want to badmouth anybody like it.
No, I don't want to badmouth anybody, but I would love to help them. Like I want to.
Right.
I want to see somebody succeed. Now, if they did a better 40 time just by me telling them a couple cues, I would absolutely love to do that. But it's just not in the cards. We can't get to every single person.
Right.
But we get to who we can get to and do what we can do with who we have. And, you know, we've been fortunate to have a ton of great guys come through this program. And, you know, I'm thankful to be able to pass on my knowledge and make somebody have a better day, or, you know, a tenth off, or, you know, some time off here, just to make them better so they go through that, you know, I always say the biggest job interview of their life, you know, confident
right.
and knowing what's going to happen.
Now, have you spoken to any of your guys there as of since they left, and just to get a feel of how they, you know, where they are mentally or anything?
You know what I try to do? I try to back up. This is a
right.
very stressful situation. I try to back up, and when they usually contact me, you know,
right.
hey, coach, this, you know, I always just, I'm always there for support. I'm never going to,
mm-hmm.
I this is me personally, I never really want to bother them or reach out to them. Just let them do their
right.
thing and not have any other distractions to worry about. So that's what I do during the day. I kind of watch, you know, and I don't kind of interfere. I just let them do their thing. They've been with me and our staff for months. It's, you know,
right.
They know what they need. We prepare them. They know what they need to do. They don't need to hear from me. They know what they know what to do. It's their day to shine. So they need to just be focused and stay with us.
With the guys that you have there, you have Miguel Masonette, Rontez Miles, and Brandon Taylor there. Each of these guys, what drill do you think each of them will excel at? You know, where you think they might be able to place a top five to top three number?
Well, it depends on position. You know, obviously
right.
some drills are considered better for others, but we spend a ton of time on each drill specifically. And
mm-hmm.
when I say a ton of time, I'm talking about breaking down the drill step by step, them knowing how many steps it takes to get here. These are predetermined drills. So, you
right.
know, we can reiterate everything. But, you know, at the same time, football is, you know, is a hectic, chaotic sport. It's read and react.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the what's the word I'm looking for? This is the heads up, the edge that we have. These are predetermined drills. We can count, okay, well, I'm doing three steps here, and we have to go around this cone here. So that's kind of the edge that we have on the side of they know what to expect. So it's prepared. They're prepared for it. So not to answer your question, not any one specific. We spend a ton of time on each single drill. We don't leave anything out.
Right.
So we're our goal is always to have the top guys – whenever our guys go to combine, have the top guys in
right.
every drill. So
everybody who's been listening, just jumping back into what's going on the field, running backs are still running their 40s. Kenyon Bonner out of Oregon just posted another 4.46. So on the day, he's running 4.4 and a 4.46, which is right in the area he was looking to get. Still the top person at the combine right now. Is Niles, I can't think of this last man's last name. Niles Davis, he posted a 4.27 40 at a $1.68. Now, we were just talking about this. What do you think about a running back? You know, you're training a running back, and you have a guy at test that's that fast, and you already know he's going to blow up, but he weighs 168. So what would you be trying to help that kid with? Because, like, that's not a good size for somebody running that fast.
So what was the question again? I'm sorry you broke up.
We were talking earlier about Niles, Rich and I. Rich Saritella is back on the show. Rich, you there?
Yeah, welcome back to the show. I guess I'm welcome back. But, hey, guys, how you doing?
Doing all right. We were just talking about with the 4.27. I was going to ask Gary, like, you had a guy who had that fast of a time, and you knew he was going to turn everybody's head, but you know his weight was going to be his biggest concern. Would you guys be focusing on trying to bulk him up for the combine, or would you just say, hey, the 4.27 is going to speak louder than your weight? What would be your advice to somebody who's going to come in like Niles?
Well, it depends on what the scouts were looking for, what his
right.
weak points are. You always try to
right.
you know, emphasize and work on the weak points and kind of let the strong points show for themselves. So, I mean, you can't really lean one way or the other. It's kind of what
mm-hmm.
what he's expecting, what teams are expecting out of him, and then we kind of, you know, meet as a group and decide from there.
All right. Well, We got a couple of your guys at the combine. The question I want to know is, what do you think Miguel is going to, you know, what is the one drill you think he's going to blow everybody's minds in? Like, when he gets out there, they're like, damn, this kid's legit.
He's got great hips and great multi-directional mm-hmm. speed. Either the 5-10-5 or the three cone, he's gonna turn some heads. We're hoping for top five, but you never know. You never know how someone's mm-hmm. gonna perform. But he's been ready for this moment for some time now. Crossing our fingers.
And Rontez, what do you think is going to be the area he excels at the combine?
You know, as a safety, you always want to be, that between that 4.6 and that 4.4, and I think he's going to open some eyes with, one, his 40. I'm hoping for, a 4.5 around that area, and, coming from a small school, there's going to be some question marks on, who he played and, the level that he played at, but this kid, he proves people wrong time and time again. He's been to all-star games, opened eyes there. He's just got great, great hips and great athleticism, and I think he's going to be a real steal for somebody in this draft.
And last but not least, Brandon Taylor, how do you think he's going to? What do you think he's going to really open some eyes at in his drills?
Bruce is going to open some eyes in his positional work.
Okay.
He's got a good 40, but his positional work, I mean, he's a linebacker. His read and react skills are going to be great and second to none.
All right. Gear, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the Combine special. Any special shout-outs you want to give to anybody?
No, not at all. Just I appreciate you guys having me on, and the Test Football family is always watching, and good luck to all my guys.
I'm telling you, Test is all over the place. To be honest, I cannot run away from you guys because Test and Jamarcus Russell are joined at the goddamn hip. Every time I turn on something, Jamarcus Russell, Garcia, Jeff Garcia, and Brian Martin.
We'll get them right. We'll get you right.
I'm trying to get Brian to retweet me so I can get famous. Like, that dude is a superstar already.
Yeah, right? I know. Yeah, you got to talk to Brian about that.
All right. Oh, I'm definitely going to talk to Brian because I want to find out how much he's been working with Rich this year. Or does he even have time for him because Jamarcus is taking up all of his time.
Yeah, right. All of a sudden, you got to get on the phone with him. Get on the horn with him and let him know. Let him know that.
All right, Gary, appreciate you stopping by, man. Thanks a lot.
All right, Gabe. Thanks for having me. All right, take care.
Everybody, that was Gary Gasmussen from Test Sports Clubs. They have quite a few players, actually, in the combine this year. They're most notable right now for the comeback of Jamarcus Russell. They've been working with he's been working at Test West Academy with Jeff Garcia. They actually had his pretty much unofficial pro day where they just got a collection of his times. He was about 6'6", weighed in at 302, 306, posted about a 5'2", 40, 27-inch vert. So and this is kind of typical for a guy starting off who hasn't run a 40 in 5 years. So Test Sports Club is really going to – you'll be seeing a lot about them. They've been all over Bleacher Report, Yahoo Sports, NFL.com, everything going on about this Jamarcus Russell comeback. Supposedly, I don't know if you guys heard that his combine or pro day is going to be at some time in April. So that is pretty much them working with him to make his official return to the NFL. Rich, with somebody like Jamarcus Russell pretty much having his second life, he's almost like a new draft prospect. Where do you see Jamarcus Russell in the 2013 draft class?
Oh, man. Listen, I love Test Football Academy, and I'll go on the record and say they're the best at what they do, but I don't want to pollute people's ears with Jamarcus Russell. That was pretty that was pretty sad to watch my man there, and I don't know. I know they've really turned around some careers, but if they can get Jamarcus Russell back in the league, then you know what? That might be the biggest accomplishment in Test Football Academy history.
Well, you know, the reason I say, you know, because he looks motivated, and you know, it's amazing what a few months could do. You know, when Joe Flacco showed up at test, I don't even think he was even a first rounder, and then he, you know, put in the work and end up going with number 19.
But, I mean, yeah, Joe Flacco came into test running like a 5.4 40, and they actually had him run like a 4.89 at the combine, I think. But, you know, Jamarcus Russell, I think he ran a 5.20, you said, or something like that. I mean, but the problem with him is that's the thing. He always looks good in a pair of gym shorts. But, you know, you get him between the lines, and I don't know. I gotta see a whole lot more. But, I mean, compared to this year's quarterback draft class, if he was in this year's draft class, he'd probably be the number one pick again.
Right. And always as usual, when the first thing about Jamarcus came out, of course the Jets had took a look at him, and everybody's like, the Jets, that sounds about right.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it might be an upgrade over Mark Sanchez.
You know what? I was looking at the show yesterday. They had Tannenbaum on, and he kind of said, like, you know, it made sense to give Sanchez that contract. And he broke it down. He was like, no matter what people said, but it's like the guy has won more games in his first 30 games than
the
NFL quarterback.
You know, Mike Tannenbaum, I got no offense, man. I'm kind of sick of him blowing this smoke. You know, and, you know, let's be honest. First of all, Sanchez still had another 2 years left on his contract. So he didn't have to award that contract. For all, you know, the reason why he's unemployed right now and he's trying out with the NFL Network and all that, the reason why he's unemployed is because his specialty is captologist. And what did he do? He buried the Jets in salary cap. And now they're anchored by this Mark Sanchez contract because he counts $18 million against the cap this year. And he wants to go back and toot the horn about all these playoff games he won. Well, that's when he did it with the supporting cast around him. And then, you know what? You took away all his weapons. And
that is true.
You know, I was having this conversation the other day, or maybe last night. I mean, you know, when he's on a team, a talented team, around him and a solid defense, he could be a game manager, a Trent Dilfer type. But when you look at last year, there's no playmakers around him on the offensive ball at all. The offensive line is shoddy. You ask Mark Sanchez to carry a team. I mean, this guy's been through, what, four different offensive coordinators in 4 years. He can't memorize any of the playbooks. He's always got the wristband on, looking down at the stupid wristband. And then he gets benched. I never seen a quarterback get benched and take so many notes on the sideline. I mean, what are you writing down? I mean, what are you taking notes on? I mean, I know Greg McElroy is a better quarterback than you, but I never saw anything like that in my life. He got benched, and next thing you know, he's writing his like autobiography. I mean, do you just not know the offense that much that you got to vigorously take notes? I don't know. I just don't know. But I think Mike Tannenbaum needs to stop blowing all this smoke about how great Mark Sanchez is, you know. And that's why you're unemployed, Mike. Look at yourself, man. No offense.
Now, see, coming up again, well, jumping back into the combine real quick, we got Mike James coming up again with his second 40. He posted a 4.50 in his first run. And he's coming up next. Just the thing about, you know, Sanchez, and I kind of bring up, and I'm not even a Sanchez fan. I could care less. I couldn't care less, which is supposed to say. But he pretty much was in that Joe Flacco realm, because these are the same things that were said about Flacco until February 2nd, that he needed a supporting cast around him, that he really wasn't that, you know, he wasn't going to carry a team to a Super Bowl. He's going to need a decent defense, and he's going to need a huge supporting cast.
I'll tell you a funny story, not to interrupt, but I was talking to Stephon Green last night at the Jersey Combine in Waldwick. He was on the Penn State team when Sanchez, his junior season, they came in I think USC put up like 550 yards on offense. I think Sanchez had like 5 touchdowns. And we were talking about how nobody thought Mark Sanchez was even on the NFL radar. Nobody, let alone be a first-round quarterback. He wasn't really even on the NFL radar. And Stephon Green said it himself. He said, you know, our defense that season is the only reason why Mark Sanchez is in the NFL, because after that game, that's when, you know, you started hearing all this talk about, oh, Mark Sanchez is thinking about declaring. And I was shocked. And,
wow,
you know, he had some success. But, I mean, just to get a feel for what other players think of Mark Sanchez, I mean, there's Stephon Green was on the Penn State team that USC beat up in the bowl game, Sanchez's last season.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, if we don't let him throw 5 touchdown passes, he probably, you know, doesn't even get taken in the first round. So,
right.
You know, and Pete Carroll even told him, you know, you better stay in school, kid. You're not ready. And I think now that we've seen him 4 years now, you kind of get a feel for what a player is after 4 seasons. So I think some of those flaws are starting to show, you know, whereas they don't have that top-rated defense anymore. They don't have the Jericho Cotcheries and Santonio Holmes and Plaxico Burreses and, you know, some of the playmakers. Keller was injured last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, Thomas Jones, let's be honest, when Thomas Jones left that New York Jets team,
yeah,
that ground-and-pound game was no longer the same.
Oh, that, I mean, that is true. And, you know, and he ended up being he was productive for like a year or two after he got out of there, but they were running – they ran him out of town, which they haven't been able to even recover from since then. I mean, they haven't had a legit running game in a while. And they did better towards the end of the season. I can't remember the other guy's name who came in who was sharing the load with –
Sean Green, Bilal Powell.
Sean Green.
And,
it was Bilal Powell, yeah, that's who came in. He actually looked a lot better than Sean Green.
And I'm getting, you know, just not to sidetrack too much, I'm getting my first look at Zach Line run his 40s. The SMU running back, a lot of people felt was somewhere between a Toby Gerhart, Brian Leonard type of back, you know, the great White Hope running back just ran. 4.81 and 4.87, I believe. So definitely living up to the label there. A little disappointing because I like Zach Line. I think he's a good player, but you can't run a 4.8 anything and be a running back in the NFL.
Coming up next is Ontario McCaleb, who posted that 4.27. We're going to see if he can actually do it again or get even better.
4.21.
Jesus Christ.
4.21. Oh, my God. Oh, Chris Johnson, if he's watching, he better hold his breath now. And not only that, he did it in pink sneakers.
Wow.
Incredible.
If anybody's been watching that one, the thing, the best part about it was that he ran in a straight line the whole time. He was no wasted movements whatsoever.
Yeah, stayed low and explosive, raises the head about 30 yards down like they teach. And, I mean, hey, if
– you know what's going to happen? This is different for Ontario. It's going to open up his film again. Like, I think GMs are going to start running scouts and running backs start looking at his film to see, was this speed on the field? Like, did it translate during the season? And I'm not going to lie, this is the first time I've heard of Ontario McCaleb, and it was from his 4.27, his 4.21. So now it's time for everybody to go back and just see if he looks that legit on film.
Man. I mean, you know, to me it goes back to, I don't know. I mean, you've been in his shoes, but, you know, me personally, if I was in his shoes and I'm 5'10", I come in, you know, 165. I play in 3 All-Star games, and I come in 165 in all 3 games, and then I come to the combine at 168. I mean, if that's me and I'm 5'10", I'm thinking, listen, man, I need to get up to like 180 and just be rock solid. You know, maybe shave a couple tenths off that 40 time for the bulk. I just don't know how 168-pound running back over a 16-game schedule can hold up. I don't know.
Well, you know what? I mean, the thing that may help him is like that Chris Johnson comparison, because one thing, Chris Johnson by no stretch is a big guy. And somehow he's been able to be durable, but he doesn't take many hits. So you have to evaluate Ontario's running style. Does he have a running style similar to a Chris Johnson, where Chris Johnson's more of a smooth runner and he barely takes hits? Or is he more like I'm trying to think of another a speed back, but is he trying to lower his shoulder, he'll be something like a guy who wants to see it lowering his shoulder. He's not going to last long, like you said. He won't be around, so it's time to really have to evaluate how he looks out there on the film. But I definitely want to check more of him out to see, you know, how many of those long runs did he break, and how many yards a game was he averaging? Because that's something where you think a guy with that kind of speed, because that's world class speed right there.
Yeah.
Is he really a track guy or not?
Well, I mean, he's definitely a weapon. I'll give you that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, any kid that can come in, make an impact as a freshman, and gain, you know, 500 yards rushing each of his four seasons and average about 7 yards of carries is pretty damn impressive. But, you know, Chris Johnson, the difference between Chris Johnson and Terrell McCaleb, Chris Johnson can keep it between the tackles. And while Ontario
right.
McCaleb does a good job, I think, of avoiding hits, you know, I think the comparison would probably be Floyd Mayweather and his defensive tactics. You know, when Floyd Mayweather gets hit, he kind of shields away and kind of rolls with the hit. I think Ontario McCaleb does a good job of that. I just think that, you know, if he cuts it to the inside instead of the outside on one too many occasions and gets, you know, stuffed underneath one of those big piles, I think he's kind of one of those guys you got to almost hold your breath every time he takes a hard hit or, you know, is at the bottom of one of those piles. So explosiveness is there. You know, talent is there. I think for Ontario McCaleb, it's like, you know, why haven't you bulked up at 5'10", 5'10 and a half? Why can't you just add those extra 10 pounds? I don't know. It just boggles my mind.
Jumping in, Robbie Rouse just ran his 40. He dropped it from a 4.78 to about a 4.69. He was an interesting looking dude because he was a tiny guy. Like, he was built so built awkward.
Yeah, and he was one of those hard nosed runners that we saw at the Senior Bowl and was very impressive. But, you know, when you come in at 5'5", 5'6", which Robbie Rouse is, I mean, people expect to see you run in that 4.4 range. So I don't think he's helping himself out with those times.
Right. You know what? He is at that Jacquizz Rodgers kind of build, and who also didn't post him. I think Jacquizz might have ran in it, but he did run in about the 4.6s to 4.5, I believe, a low 4.5,
right.
A high 4.6. But yeah, 4.7 and 8 is just not impressive at all.
Yeah, and you know, 4.78, 4.72 for Stephon Taylor from Stanford. You know, I'm curious to see what these official numbers are going to be, just because, you know, one, let's see if Ontario McCaleb breaks the fastest electronic 40 in combine history held by Chris Johnson. You know, we all know the story about Deion Sanders running the 4.19.
Yeah. <It's>
And then he left. And then he turned around and just walked off the combine. He just left the combine. He wasn't doing any other. In fact, I remember a story, I think, I forget who was it. I don't know if it was Ernie Accorsi or one of the Maras was telling a story about how they went to go interview Deion Sanders leading up to the draft. And they wanted to bring him in for a private workout or fly him in and meet with them. And he said, you know, well, when you picking, man? They said, oh, well, you know, we got the 15th pick or whatever. He's like, I don't want to waste my time. So, like, yeah, I'm not wasting my time, man. I'm top 10. So, but, you know, going back to the Chris Johnson 40s in Jeopardy, but the one thing, and I haven't seen the official numbers on the wideouts either yet, is that there's been a lot of wide margins on the 40 times. You know, I've seen a whole second differential on a lot of guys. They'll run 4-4-3, and then they'll come out and run, you know, 4-5-6. So
right.
I think a lot of players are going to be asked to run a third time just because there's been such a discrepancy. But mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on with the NFL Network, if it has something to do with them in terms of how they're reporting the times, if there's something going on with the track this year in Indy. But I can tell you, I can't remember any combine having such a discrepancy on so many players between the time difference on their first run and second run unofficial.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see what the official numbers are once they come down the wire.
Well, some of the receivers, one person, I guess we weren't expecting him to run it a big 40 time, but he had a ridiculously productive year at USC, Robert Woods. Because kind of coming in, I thought he was going to be one of the top receivers because he looked really good last year. But, again, like USC had, you know, top receivers all over the field. So, I mean, who could you really cover? But, you know, he posted a 4.51, which I guess is not that bad for a receiver, being that some of the best receivers in the NFL don't have the fastest time. So you look at Larry Fitzgerald and –
Anquan Boldin, like 4.75 or something like that. So, Marcus Colston was another one who was a slow wide receiver, and look what he did. You know, so I mean, I think there's a certain, you know, Bill Polian's big on having a certain criteria, you know, a window or a frame. You know, for each position, he likes to see a certain 40 time. And Sierre Wood from Notre Dame, checking in now, a lot of people question whether or not he should declare for the draft. Ran a 4.50 unofficially on his first run. Taking the line now, we actually have Sierre Wood right now as our 10th best running back in that third or fourth round range, and he got off to a bad start there. Did not stay low, was not explosive, got up too high, too early, and that's going to be in the 4-5 range. 4-5-3.
And you can't, 4-5-3, you really can't hate on that. That's not that bad. But the thing is, like you said, because of the technique, he left a lot left to be desired. He could have definitely got a sub 4-5 if he just cleaned up his technique a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason why, you know, he tested in at 4.49 on his junior pro day. So he comes out here and he runs slower than he did a year ago. You know, going back to people questioning whether or not it was a smart decision to declare for the NFL draft. I mean, there's a handful of guys rated higher than him. So would another year of college helped boost his draft stock? I don't know. I mean, we talked about the running back dilemma where, you know, running backs just aren't getting taken that high anymore. Oh, I mean, it's a catch-22. I think with the new rookie wage scale as well, I think players actually are trying to get into the league earlier to get that to that second contract faster, because
That's true.
Contract now is the lottery ticket. So the faster you can get in the league and the faster you can get to that second contract, that's really the one where you're going to get paid now, because, you know, it's not like the first round money of 3 or 4 years ago, ever since they adjusted that whole slotting system. You know, whether you're a mid or late first round pick or a second round pick, there's not a big money difference like there used to be. So I think, you know, players are making that jump. That's why we saw a record number of underclassmen. You know, the faster you can get to that second contract now, I think a lot of people feel like they're better off financially.
See, as a player, if that's where your head is at, then you're making a poor decision. And to me, those are decisions that are driven by your agent. And that's the kind of dumb stuff agents do. They'll try to get you pumped up saying, this is why you need to leave, because you can get this money if you get to here. And that's very poor planning, because you're not going to probably make it that far if you're not – if a team's going to draft you and you still have a lot of skills left that you really need to clean up, you might not even make it to that second contract. And as you see, with the fact that they're not paying you that much in your first few years, it makes it easier for them to get rid of you. So it's actually not helping you. It's just, it makes it easier to push you out the door if you don't produce quick enough.
Yeah, and I think it's that dirty agent game too, where you look at Sierre Wood, junior underclassman. You know, how many agents were in his ear whispering, "Hey man, Don't waste another year in college. You can come out now and be a first-round pick. And they'll tell the kid that just so they can sign him up. And if he goes second or third round, they don't care.
And he might not even be the best running back because you have, what's his name, Theo Riddick coming out, who is going to be more he's going to be valued more because he played receiver and running back. So, you know, you have a guy who essentially could be a Reggie Bush type but with a bigger frame. So now you're looking at, you know, you got a better running another running back at your school leaving who you were kind of splitting time with at sometimes. You could be a feature back coming back, and you're really going to pass that up. And to be honest, if you're not – as a running back, you need to stay in school as long as possible, become a higher pick, because – even if you're the top running back, you might not even go into the late first round, if that, or the second round. And there are not elite backs like that. The only other elite back that might have been a top 10 pick might have been Marcus Lattimore. And because of that injury, you know, he was going to probably go along the lines of what was the guy's name in the running back for Michael Bush. When Michael Bush broke his leg and he got drafted, I think, you know, second or
Louisville.
Third round, but they knew from Louisville.
Third. Yeah.
Third round, Raiders picked him up and just said, we'll be able to put him on a shelf, same thing with Willis McGahee. So it's going to be kind of one of those issues.
Yeah, I think Marcus Lattimore, you know, from what I hear, and you listen to Dr. Andrews speak earlier in the week at the Combine, he was very noncommittal about Marcus Lattimore playing this season. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, whoever drafts Marcus Lattimore is going to have to redshirt him. And, you know, when you have to redshirt a running back, I don't know that in today's NFL a team is willing to invest more than a third or fourth round pick. So while Marcus Lattimore could arguably be the best running back in this draft, are you willing to use up a first or second round pick and have the patience to wait 2 years until this guy makes an impact? I mean, the NFL is such a what have you done for me now? You know, I don't know how many general managers are out there willing to put their neck on the line and use up a first or second round pick on a running back who might not play for 2 years. It's just too much of a time to wait for that highly of an invested pick to perform.
As we almost start to wrap up our draft, our combine special, let's talk about one of the most important parts of yesterday, the Mantis KO press conference.
Yeah.
Did you watch it, and what did you take away from it? Because I personally end up liking the guy even more because I think that he answered everything just genuinely. And I couldn't see how he could be this, you know, how this would be a distraction because for him, or how this should be held against him going forward. Because I think right now, only thing that should matter is the numbers posted at the combine. Because I didn't see him BSing anybody at that press conference.
Well, you know, he's been in hiding for so long. I think he got a lot of good media training. He was definitely very much more prepared than he was on that Katie Couric interview, and you know. When I look at Manti Te'o, the kid didn't commit a crime. It wasn't a violent crime act. It wasn't an illegal crime act. It was just a gullible crime of act. And, you know, to me, I still don't buy the story. I just don't think it's possible that, you know, all these people, I mean, I don't know anybody in the world that has enough time on their hands to create another life, another person, and create another identity, and then spend 4 years trying to fool somebody, and then bringing other people in on trying to fool this person for 4 years. There's this group of people trying to, what do they call it, catfish you? And I just don't buy the story. I just don't see it possible. I mean, as a man, I could never have a internet phone relationship with a gal and never even meet her for 4 years. I mean, I just think it's just the story. Like I said on one of the earlier shows I was on, when it smells like fish, it's usually fishy. And, you know, I just don't buy the story. But all that aside, is he a football player? And I think You know, you look at the Giants at 19, you look at the Bears at 20, you look at the Ravens at 32, and I think that, you know, all three of those teams are in the market for a middle linebacker. So I know there was a lot of talk at one point in terms of him being a top 10, but I think even without this whole catfish incident, I think people are starting to question, you know, whether he was a top 10 talent based off of just that performance against Alabama,
right,
where he just steamrolled all game long and did not look like an elite talent.
And I'm gonna, and I'll be honest, when we were talking, I was talking with a friend of mine who's a Bears fan. He was saying, "Well, I hope we get Taylor at 20 to like move on from like to pretty much be the next guy to replace Urlacher." And I was like,
right,
"He's going to drop because, to be honest, I don't think he's going to put up the numbers of the combine to solidify him as one of the top middle linebackers in this draft. It's just something about the way, like his build and the way he looks. It's like I see him running in the 4.7s. Maybe a high 4.6. I don't see his agility drills looking great. I don't just see him putting up any big numbers at the combine at all.
Let me spin it in a different manner, and let's take his combine measurables out of the equation for a second. Okay,
mm-hmm.
You played in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Middle linebacker is the quarterback of the defense.
Right.
So here's this kid that's basically viewed as a clown. I mean, no, really. I mean, I don't know if I can take him seriously. Is he a leader of men? And if you're in that huddle and a rookie first-round middle linebacker is probably coming in and starting, are you willing to handle, you know, can this kid the keys to the Cadillac of your defense? I got to ask, Aki, in the huddle, this rookie comes into, you know, your team and is now calling plays in the huddle. Are you looking at him kind of funny, scratching your head? I think I might be.
See, for me, the reason I wouldn't, because I said this, I was like, if this man has not committed suicide by the time draft rolls around a combine, then he's mentally tough enough to handle it. Because they asked him a question, he's like, "Well, was this embarrassing?" He was like, "Hell yeah, this was embarrassing." Like, he got up there and was like, "Hell yeah, this was embarrassing." You understand what happened? This was embarrassing. And when he said that, I was like, "Yeah, this kid is a gym. Well, at least he was," because I'd never heard him say, "Yeah, this is just some embarrassing stuff." He kept saying, "Well, you know, I was tricked. I'm not sure what was going on." He was just like, "Yo, this was embarrassing, man." And I was like, "Yeah, okay, I could believe that now." So I think his mental toughness is there. And one thing I won't allow people to say is that, well, because he knew about this thing being a hoax and coming out during the national championship game, it affected him. I don't believe that at all. I think that's just a load of bull to just
believe the story. From top to bottom, I don't believe the story at all. I don't. I think Tua Sopo, I think he's taking one for the team, and I really honestly believe I have no proof of this. This is just pure speculation on my behalf. I think there's a little goodie bag tucked away in Manti Te'o's first contract for Tuasi Sopo for coming out, putting his neck on the line, and making all these false accusations to take the heat off of Manti Te'o. I don't believe Manti Te'o. I'm sorry. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. And I think he did a great job of hiding and creating enough doubt that his story could actually stick, because I think time is a difference maker in stories like this. He went in hiding for a week or two and didn't say anything. And then when he came out, we heard this whole radical story about how he was fish-hooked, whatever, catfish.
You have to see this show and you'll understand how it does happen.
I don't know. I can't see people dedicating their lives to fooling somebody into thinking that a person exists but really doesn't for over a 4-year span. I mean, you know, and you're talking about I used to fall asleep on the phone and wake up 8 hours later and still hear her breathing and like, dude, really?
You just have too little faith in the craziness of the human race. I completely believe it can happen. Like I have faith there are people that that are that sick. So everybody, while we're talking about Taylor, we just want to bring you back live to what's going on out there in the combine right now. Right now the running backs are going through change of direction drills. They're going through the they're getting a handoff and choosing a direction and turning and cutting just to see how well they how quickly they react in the hole. I like this drill because I like to see how low those guys get and how they just turn that corner. And I think the positional drills for running backs mean a lot more because for them it seems like who makes their cuts the smoothest. And the way I kind of describe it, if you watch Adrian Peterson cut, he's a hard cutter. Like he comes in and he plants his that foot in and makes a hard cut every time. And as we were talking about before, somebody like Chris Johnson, who makes smooth cuts where everything just looks fluid. Like he doesn't look like he's running fast, but you know, all the meanwhile he's burning.
Yeah, and you know, just to give a quick shout out to Ontario McCaleb, we'll see if this 4-2-1 time stands up. But at the very least, it did make him now officially trending on Twitter. But, going back to the running back explosion drill, you know, I think this is actually maybe more important than the 40-yard dash times. You know, you go back to the Alfred Morris reference that you talked about before. So, you know, I think it's good to see them in this kind of atmosphere. Of course, obviously, you'd like to see it with some pads on and maybe some contact and players react a little bit differently. But I think you get a good feel for a running back's burst and acceleration and kind of anticipation and just his cutback ability. So, you know, you talk about a guy like Ontario McCaleb, he should probably be a running back who excels at this drill.
Giovanni ran earlier, and he looked pretty smooth out there. He looked really nice. The guy who just came out, I want to say his name was Zach Burkhead, one of the running backs. It looks like he might be playing fullback. He looked smooth out there. You know, he ran, about like a 4.7, 8.40.
Yeah, you know, and here's the thing about Rex Burkhead from Nebraska. Here's a kid who was invited to the East-West Shrine game. He was invited to the Senior Bowl. He said, you know what, now I'm going to pass that up because I'm too focused on training for the combine. And he said, I'm going to dedicate all my time to the combine. And then you come out, and what'd you say? He ran a 4.7 something?
I think he ran a 4.7, if I'm correct.
So, I mean, here's a kid who blew off the opportunity to be in, you know, two of the biggest networking NFL events in terms of getting to the next level and being able to showcase his talents and his skill set in front of NFL teams because he wanted to focus on his NFL combine training, and then you come out and run these times. Now that's a head scratcher for me.
Right, and I don't understand. I don't want to badmouth anybody's representation or anything, but I just kind of wonder what makes somebody do that because those practices is where
You earn your money.
Am I arguing?
No, I say you earn your money in those practices.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's where you earn your money.
That's where you earn your money.
And one of the biggest parts of these All-Star games are not the actual game in itself. The most important part of the practice is because you get to be around NFL coaches. They get to see you on a day-to-day basis. So even if you had a bad game, they can easily say, well, hell, I've been with this guy all week, and I've seen him do amazing things in practice. That is the most important part of these All-Star games. And when you miss an opportunity to see what it feels like to be in an NFL-type system for a week and you actually get to know these coaches personally, you really miss out on a huge opportunity than actually playing in the game.
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly, and I think Rex Burkhead just cost himself, you know, from a mid to late round guy. I mean, if those numbers stand up, I mean, there's a good chance he might not get drafted now.
Right, and you know, nobody's really drafting fullbacks right now. One fullback I was surprised to see the guy Justich out of Harvard.
Say that three times fast.
I've been living in Poland for 3 years. I should be able to say it so say it easy.
one of the hardest names to pronounce, Kyle Juszczyk from Harvard. You know, he's kind of he's not really a tight end. He's more of like a Chris Cooley, if I had to compare him to somebody, kind of an H-back, not really on the line of scrimmage, maybe coming out of the backfield in that H-back type of role. But I think he can play a little bit of fullback, and I think he can be a blocker. He's not one of those fullbacks that's going to, you know, take a handoff and gain some, you know, short yardage for you. But I think in terms of his blocking ability, he showed a very good ability to pick up, you know, bigger, you know, blocker, you know, bigger players than him and hold them off at the Senior Bowl.
He really did really well in those one-on-one.
Yeah,
drills.
he really held his own going up against a lot of these players that were bigger, stronger, and faster than him. So he's what you call a technician.
Right, and speaking of those blocking drills, that's where Giovanni Bernard actually was struggling when I was watching those one-on-one drills. He really had a hard time picking up blocks because, I mean, he's a small snatcher guy, and he just seemed uncomfortable out there.
Right, and you talk about a guy at 5'8", and, you know, mm-hmm. people want to label him as the top running back in the draft. Well, if he's the top running back in the draft, are you willing to use a first-round pick on a player who's a two-down back?
Mm-hmm. Up next for the running backs, they're moving on to the next drill, which is outside run. They're doing an outside toss, and they're keeping their and they got to run through the series of backs to keep their knees up. And, actually, I'm completely wrong. They're doing a change of direction drill. They're pretty much running from cone to cone, switching, cutting and turning. Just want to see how low they get in their cuts and how fast can they change direction. This one, I do this with myself because actually it's pretty good for D lineman, to be honest, because it helps you learn how to turn at edge in pass rush. They really are working, these dudes. But what's going on, too? It's like yesterday I'm watching the combine, and everybody seemed to have on all different types of sneakers, but it seems like Nike went and just bought out the whole running back section with these new Volt colored gloves and sneakers.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a little war behind the scenes going on between Nike and Under Armour. I know there's a big battle going on, and Rawlings is trying to get into the mix. So if we're talking athletic apparel, I want to get to the bottom of who's designing these shirts, these tie-dye 70s combine shirts, because I don't know, man. I think I'm tripping over here on some acid or something, some shrooms. I'm looking up. I see, like, tie-dye combine jerseys going. I never saw that before.
You know, Under Armour really is, like, they really are pushing the envelope, and even the jerseys are getting out of control. In Maryland, they were the guinea pigs for everything.
Yeah.
So they have about the only other team with more color combinations is Oregon. And speaking of Oregon, Kenyon Barnett just went through a drill of pretty quick and smooth going through the whole thing. But Oregon, I think they have, I don't know, probably like 40 or 50 combinations, and I'm not even lying, of helmets, because I think they have about 3 or 4 different color helmets, 5 or 6 jerseys and pants. So
it's crazy. And Maryland had that jersey last year. It was like almost like they sewed 2 different jerseys together.
Right.
Like half one jersey. It was like 2 jerseys in one. It's like, depending on what side you were looking at, it was a completely different jersey. But, you know, hey, man, any way for the NFL to capitalize and make a buck and have alternative jerseys, and you go back to even to the NCAA collegiate level, any way to make a buck off of these players, they're going to capitalize on it.
Zach Bourne just recently running through the gauntlet, the slalom. He was all over the place with his technique. He was slipping and falling. Jesus.
Yeah, you know, I mean, here's a guy, you talk about one-dimensional players. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy, he's like the Terminator. If you guys know John Connor from the Jets, you know, Zach Bourne isn't going to really do much of anything except blow you up. He's going to, you know, try to get to that second level, seek out the linebacker, and just blow him up. And that's really who Zach Bourne is, and that's really what Zach Bourne does. And I don't know if he gets drafted, but, you know, one of these teams that are still left in the NFL that do believe in traditional type of fullbacks, you know, that's where he'll probably find a happy home.
Well, guys are running through the slot. The one thing you have to look at is just how they approach the cones. You know, Jonathan Franklin actually did a pretty decent job of maneuvering around the cones, but they're going to look for guys who are looking down at the ground, because if you're running through traffic, you can't have your eyes on the ground. You need to keep your eyes up and see what's coming next. They want to see how well do you know your spacing, just like your on-field awareness. And when guys are turning the corner, how many times do they chop their feet? Like, if you're breaking down, you know, so far away from the cone, that means you just can't make that quick cut. And that, you know, that's kind of the thing I'm watching for now is just the feet. And you know, we up right now is DJ Harper. He's looking pretty smooth, but the thing is, his eyes are down the ground. You always want to keep your eyes up, like they always say. You got to be looking for what's happening downfield.
Yeah, and Montel Harris, I think, just did a good job of showing
yeah.
that fluidity. And here's your guy, Mike James, looking down a bit at times, but getting through those cones pretty quick. And Juwan Jameson, the local product, one of my favorite players in this year's draft. Now he's got a scooter. Whew.
Yeah.
Juwan Jameson is silky smooth. Whew. I like how this kid runs. And
right.
You know, he's got that same label.
Slowing down.
Yeah, I mean, he's got that same label as Ray Rice about, you know, being an undersized back, but I think this kid can handle the load, and I think he's going to be a Ray Rice clone.
As we said, that's the popular thing, and we'll see how well he does when he gets to the receiving side of it, because that's where it's going to separate a lot of guys. The story I heard was that the difference between Ricky Williams and Edgerrin James in that draft was the fact that when they worked out Edgerrin James, he never dropped a pass. And Ricky Williams put the ball on the ground a couple of times, and that's why Edgerrin James is up in with the Colts, and Ricky Williams has been with the Saints. But, I mean, not taking anything right with Ricky Williams. Here comes Terrell McCaleb up, the Mr. 4-2-7. Now we got to see how he looks in these drills. And, you know, he looks kind of stiff in his upper body going around.
Yeah, listen, I think here's a perfect example where you look at him and say, man, he trained for this event because – you know, probably time-wise, it was probably as quick as anybody out there. But when you look at the technique, it's not what you're looking for in terms of the technique and the stop and start, you know, pivot on a dime type of cutting ability that we were talking about. So, you know, while the time looks good on paper, when you physically watch them run through the cones, it just looks kind of awkward.
Right. And, you know, Robbie Rouse just ran through. He seemed to change up his technique halfway through it. And when you see guys run like this, you know, when they're running tight end, it just seems like they're more concerned about the stage and rather than just letting their, like, natural abilities just take over.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes these guys have been doing these repetitions so much.
Right.
Sometimes it gets in their heads. And
exactly.
You know, they do the physical repetitions, and after a while, there's certain mental markers, and there becomes mental repetitions, and sometimes you just think about it too much when
right.
you should just really go out there and let it ride and go with the flow and let it loose naturally. You can't think too much. When you start thinking, as you know, that's when you get hurt.
Exactly. Right, and I think and everybody can see that. Here's your boy out of Sierra Wood coming out. It's and with his cut, it seemed like he was getting so far outside the cone on his cuts, rather than staying tight to it. Which it just looked a little bit different. He has a towel in his pants. For what reason, I have no idea. The towel in the pants is only reserved for game days, but I guess he's out there trying to look sweet during his combine.
Well, in other words, he's trying to say, you know, stop sweating me.
Right.
You know, I'm actually, you know, the beautiful thing about the combine coverage is like you can be watching one camera. I'm watching, you know, some of the quarterbacks throw right now, and Tyler Bray, a little bit disappointing this week at the combine. Landry Jones, not looking too bad. But, you know, one of the beautiful things about the combine coverage is they have so many different angles, so many different events going on. You can go
right.
online and watch one thing. You can watch another thing on the TV. And, you know, like I said, we got Joe Everett down there in Indy. And, you know, he's disappointed because, you know, first of all, they put you in the media room where, you know, it's so crowded you can't even see the monitors. You basically have a media credential, but you're watching the NFL Network in a room with other media members, and it's difficult to see. Then, you know, they actually took a handful of media members onto the field for some workouts today, and Joe was lucky enough to be one of those guys, but he said, you know, where they were seated or located, they really couldn't see too much of what was going on. And, you know, when I was at the Combine last year, just talking to a lot of – you know, the teams in general, because when you're in Indianapolis, you know, you'll be at the bar, at a restaurant, eating, talking to the person next to you, and, you know, next thing you know, you find out who they are. They're X, Y, and Z at, you know, this team and that team and whatever the case may be. But, you know, talking to a lot of the execs on the NFL teams, they prefer to watch the combine on TV. They said they can actually see more of what's going on the NFL Network coverage than actually being there in person. So, you know, I think they've done a wonderful job just with the whole coverage as a whole. And I think every year, you know, like you see, it just continues to evolve.
Right. And I think it's becoming a bigger spectacle, but in a good way, because it's keeping people just interested in the football all year round, because it is a pretty interesting process, because the one thing I kind of wish they started to do more is get more behind the scenes. You know, you kind of want to figure out what kind of questions you hear about these meetings. And, you know, you kind of want to get the insight of, like, what they're asking in these meetings, because they always, you know, tend to ask crazy questions. In the most recent years, the most popular one was a Denver exec asking it was either Denver or Miami asking
– Miami, yeah. Tony Sperano asking Blackman about his mother.
It was Des Bryant. Des Bryant was your
mother's
prize,
right,
too.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you kind of hear stuff like that. It's like, where did that come from? So, you know, I think at some point it's going to get close to where we get to see more of that, even more about what they go through through the medical evaluation, because you just hear just so much about that evaluation, like having guys at 6 in the morning. I mean, I don't know how many people know about what goes on at the combine, but those guys have been there for the past 4 days, and they're getting these guys up at 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning, shuttling them to breakfast, and they're just shipping them off.
Well,
you got to go to the doctor.
What if I told you this? Kate, let me tell you this. If NFL Network's listening right now, can either call me and I'll produce it for you, or you can just steal the idea like you've done once or twice before. But, you know, how about doing a hard knock style? You know, you pick a team, say like the Jacksonville Jaguars, who, you know, could use the publicity. You have a hard knock style combine, and we're following the Jaguars, you know, GM, their coaches, what they're talking about, what they're talking, you know, we go after the combine workouts into the boardroom where they have their arguments and they discuss players, and, you know, maybe it doesn't air until after the draft, so we don't unveil all their secrets. But I think, you know, that's definitely something that I think people would gobble up. I think it's a no-brainer. And I think one day when NFL Network gets around to listening to our podcast, they can run with the idea. But, you know, hey, you could always call me, too. We can make this happen.
Yeah, I gotta keep sending my messages to Bucky Brooks and Matt Money Smith, because I mean, so they can start retweeting us, and we'll be set.
Right. Yeah. Well, hey, listen. I mean, you talk about the combine coverage. Now they actually have a channel on NFL.com. I don't know if they're on right now, but you know they were one of the tag teams. I think Daniel Jeremiah, who's been a wonderful addition, and
with your boy Steve Weiss.
Steve Weiss.
he's with your boy Steve Weiss.
Right, he's cool like that, and you know they're doing their thing. So, you know, I definitely like it. I definitely like where the combine coverage has gone, and I think they've done a good job. I know I was busted on Mr. T before, but I think people like Mike Tannenbaum and Scott Pioli bring a lot of credibility to the whole broadcast analyst in terms of just some of the talent they had before, like a Matt Millen and some of these other guys. Okay, you know, the last person I want telling me about the whole draft process is Matt Millen. I mean, you know, it's like, how can you listen to this guy's advice and even take him seriously? It was almost like a joke, just like laughing, listening to this guy tell you about who he thinks is good, you know? So, you know, I think Tannenbaum and Pioli bring a little bit credibility to the broadcast, and I do enjoy them. You know, I don't think Mr. T has a career in TV, but, you know, I mean, I like to get his perspective, and, you know, every time I watch him, I learn more and more why he was an unsuccessful GM.
you really enjoy you know, you really are using this platform to really bash Tannenbaum. But
hey, you know what? I was talking to some former Jets last night, and they were doing the same thing. So, you know, it's all in good fun, and you know, Mr. T is pretty thick-skinned, and he's dealt with the New York media for quite a while, so he can handle it. He's a big boy.
That's for sure. Well, everyone, you've been with us for about an hour and a half listening to the NFL Draft Bible Combine special. I want to thank everybody because we're going to wrap this up because right now the last thing that's going on right now are the second group of receivers. They're going through their broad jumps, I believe, and they're also going through their vertical jumps. Just to circle back, is there anybody that you thought really impressed you as far as, you know, out of any of these guys that performed over the last few days? I'll throw Ryan Nassib in, not particularly in like all the, in the quarterback drills per se, but when they were doing the quarterbacks were running, the receivers were running their routes and they were throwing, I thought he looked a lot more impressive, and I think he's actually doing a huge service for himself. And Matt Barkley is really going to have time struggling to get back into that top tier, or even if he wasn't a top tier, being just mentioned in that second quarterback range. I think the guys are going to start leapfrogging him in this process over these next couple of days.
Yeah, it's been a while for Barkley. You know, he sat out the bowl game. He skipped the Senior Bowl. He's waiting on his pro day. He's not going to throw at the combine. So, you know, we said it before, it's a what have you done for me lately business, and Matt Barkley hasn't done anything of late. So I look at a kid like Ryan Nassib. A lot of people have him as the number one quarterback overall on the big board. I'm not as high on him as that, but I think, you know, he's a pro-style quarterback, played in a pro-style offense, and played for a pro-style coach in Doug Marrone. So I think he brings a lot of good intangibles and experience, but I go back to the big uglies, and the man of the hour so far to me is Teron Armstead from Arkansas Pine Bluff. The young man we had on 2 weeks ago, he came on our show, the NFL Draft Bible Player Spotlight Show, and said, I'm going to run a 4.70. And I said, Teron, if you do that, man, you're going to go first round. So what does he do? He comes to the combine and runs a 4.70.
Right.
And I don't think I don't see a scenario where he escapes the first round. So I think in terms of anybody, and, you know, he came into the all-star circuit as a mid to late round guy, worked his way up to a second or third round projection on our board coming into the combine. Mm-hmm. And I think he leaves Indianapolis with the first round grade. And then, you know, just to keep it with the big uglies, Lane Johnson, we talked about him.
He goes out a lot, man.
He runs a faster 40 time than Anquan Boldin and has a vertical jump and has a vertical jump the same as AJ Green. So, I mean, I never seen offensive linemen come out and explode onto the scene. Like I said, every year they're bigger, stronger, faster. And I think those two guys, I think, really solidified their draft stock. On the wide receivers real quick, I think, you know, listen, everybody loves that track speed. Tavon Austin,
yeah.
I think, you know, a lot of people compare him to Percy Harvin. I'm starting to think maybe he's a better version of Percy Harvin.
Wow. I can't even throw that out there because, you know, Percy is a beast, and Percy's a little bit bigger than him. And I think Percy, outside of the injury, he was their offense. AP came on. He had a good – AP, well, let's not get it wrong, AP had a great year, but – Percy Harvin was making that offense go at the beginning of the season. And I think
you got to factor everything in being equal. You factor in the migraines, and I think Tavon Austin is a guy that might be a more valuable player. And, you know, you go back to that game, we had, you know, over 500 all-purpose yards and you know, 572 all-purpose yards. I don't know if it was the bowl game. I forget what game it was. That's the kind of talent he brings to the table. And, you know, I think he's just a weapon with the ball in his hands. He can score at any time. I'm sorry, looking at it now. Oklahoma, 572 all-purpose yards. Tavon Austin, I think this guy can hurt you in more ways than one.
Right. Well, yeah, it's definitely going to be good to see, interesting to see how a couple of those guys kind of like fare, especially we were talking about the other guy, Michaela, Ontario Michaela, who's also is going to be looked at in that same kind of way with, you know, his speed and his build. So it's going to be a lot of versatile players coming into this draft, it seems like. There's a lot of guys that are going to be ranked high who are in that kind of like Percy Harvin type mold. And it's going to be interesting because is that what the NFL is becoming? It's like, is it those receivers that can play running back that can play receiver? And is that what happens with the evolution of this whole spread offense?
Yeah, I think that's what you see. You know, these guys playing out in space, more spread, like you said, more wideouts and more players playing in open space. And, you know, you talk about the NFL competition committee talking about widening the field. If they ever do a thing like that, then you'll continue to see this trend continue.
Right. To me, actually, that does make a lot of sense. I mean, that's one of the few things that I think would help because with the guys just getting bigger and faster, you need more room to run. It's kind of like sometimes you see that running back hitting that sideline. He's like, well, if the sideline was just an extra inch further, he probably would have turned that corner off. So it's probably everything is geared towards the offense, to be honest, and that's what it's about. So if you're winding the field, it's to make the receiver, give the receivers a better opportunity to burn downfield and give them more space to run and catch the ball. So it's going to go against the defense, and it's going to make the corner position a lot more valuable because you're going to need guys who can pretty much cover the whole field. It's definitely going to change the whole middle linebacker, the way you play that position, because already it's out of a 250-pound middle linebacker is out of there. You got to think one of the best to ever do it. Ray Lewis had to drop down about 235 just to play this year, just to stay, you know, useful in coverage, even though it still didn't work. But I say, if there was anybody who I knew that was happy that Super Bowl ended,
real quick, I came out to not to interrupt you. We got some official times here. Ontario McCaleb has tied. What was Chris Johnson's 4.34? No, Chris Johnson was 4.24.
I think it was a 4.29 or something like that.
Yeah, okay. So Ontario McCaleb did not break the record. 4.34 officially. So, you know, I was curious to see these official times because there was such a big split and difference. So he goes from 4.21. Unofficial to 4.34 official, and Nile Davis actually comes a pretty close second at 4.37.
That's absurd. That really is, I don't know how you go that far behind.
And again, I mean, last year, I think the fastest 40-yard dash time of any running back last year was 4.40. So nobody even was under that 4.40 mark last year. This year, only two. Ontario McCaleb, 4.34 official. Nile Davis, 4.37 official. Third fastest, Kerwin Williams. Of course, the big play, Utah State running back, 4.48. And Jonathan Franklin, 4.49. Those are the only four running backs under 4.50.
All right, everybody. Well, you know what? We will end on that note. Tune in tomorrow when we'll come back tomorrow with my favorite positions to look at will be the D-line and linebackers. Tomorrow we'll have more guys, we'll have more guests joining us to talk about D-line, linebackers, and everybody. Always stay tuned to the NFL Draft Bible Player Spotlight Show where we always bring you the names you need to know first in this upcoming draft. And also, you know, keep tuned in for the Combine Special where we give you just our evaluation of the day and a review of everything going on. Richard, you want to drop a line?
Hey, Combine time. It's that time again, and I'm looking forward to doing this again tomorrow because we kind of strung this together last second, Aki. I think next time tomorrow, you know, we'll promote the show. We'll get some more guests on, and I had a lot of fun breaking it down in real-time live Combine coverage. So I got an idea. Let's do it again tomorrow.
hey, it's a deal. Everybody, thanks for tuning in, and take care.